and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. This is Irreverent, Faith and Current Affairs.
Welcome to Irreverent Faith and Current Affairs, the number one Christian podcast in Great Britain. Tom, did you know that we're the number one Christian podcast in Great Britain? Have I mentioned that to you?
You have, Jamie, you have. If you do it by episode, so not by sort of, not the standard list. There's a bit, I don't know, it's well, so our episodes... Our episodes are listened to by more people than any other episodes.
Yeah, our individual episodes are downloaded more than any other individual episodes, which is like saying, like we were just talking about this, weren't we? On like the singles chart, if people remember what that is. I think it still exists, you know, with music. Like when I was growing up, you'd have like a band like Blur release a song like Country House, which is a great song, by the way. And it would go to number one because more people bought that individual single, which was at that time is something called a CD. Than any other singles that were bought, and that went to number one, and that meant they had a number one. So basically, I realized this week because David Robertson told me, who's got another great Christian podcast called Quantum, and he calls himself the Wee Flea. I think he's got a blog called the Wee Flea. Anyway, he told me that our podcast is basically always at number one, and I was thinking, well, no, it's not, because the chart I look at, it's always kind of hovering around like 10, 20, something like that. It turns out if you actually look at the episodes chart, our podcast does go to number one pretty much every week. So it's very encouraging, really, isn't it?
It's good. I mean, thank you, everyone. It's really humbling.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, especially when you consider that we're completely sort of what did the Church Times say, that we were podcasting on the edge of the Overton window.
Yeah, which reminds me, to the tune of is it Kiss? I've been singing on the edge of a broken heart. I don't know.
I don't know the song, but do it anyway.
No, I can't. It's very falsetto.
Just do it an octave down. I want to get an idea.
Is it Kiss? I've been singing on the edge of a broken heart. And it's like a rock anthem. Yeah. Okay, I've been pogging on the edge of the Overton with podding.
All right, posh.
I've been podding on the edge of the Overton window. And it's a kind of counter bit. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, but my message to them would be, we can't be that much on the edge of the Overton window because we're the number one Christian podcast in Great Britain. So
we are the Overton window.
We are the Overton window. Yes, we are shifting the Overton window to our perspective. We've got a monopoly on the Overton window.
It's Vixen. It's Vixen, not Kiss. So Vixen.
Vixen. Yeah. No, I mean, I've heard of them. I don't know really. I was more into kind of like
glam metal,
Metallica, and things like that. Things are a little bit harder. Guns and Roses. And then when I was a bit older, Rage Against the Machine, although I've gone off them a bit now because it's a bit.
They're very woke, aren't they? But they always were.
Yeah, and it's a bit sort of what would you call it? Like adolescent. Like the lyrics are somewhat, you know.
It's got good bass lines, though.
Oh, amazing. And Tom Morello is one of my favorite guitarists as well. Something else I was going to say about that, about being the number one podcast. I can't remember. The other thing that they said on Church Times was that, and the Church Times, so this is like the first time they've ever mentioned us. They said that people who listen to us would have to adjust their outrage-ometer. Or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Well, to be fair, much of the Church Times readership probably would be, but the other thing they said was that when we took apart the you and Daniel, I think they're talking about your deconstruction of the Church Commissioner's report into slavery, and they said this is where a rant becomes a structured harangue or something, which I thought was quite nice.
A structured harangue, yeah. I suppose that's not a. That's not really a criticism, is it? That's a compliment, if anything.
Compliment.
Structured harangue. Okay. Well, that's good. Well, remember, Tom, I forgot that detail. But like, you know, we're not against the Church Times. We just want exclusively positive comments in the future, please. So thanks. Anyway, that's just a joke. You say what you like, Church Times. I made that joke before about a listener giving us a bad review, and it was received very badly. And then he gave us the same review, but even worse because of what I'd said. So probably best not to take on the might of the Church Times in that regard.
Was that the one who criticised us for interrupting each other?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Which let's not go into it. It was completely fair. It was a completely fair, valid criticism. And we thank the reviewer for it.
It's gonna make an even worse one because of your sarcasm now, Jamie.
It's not
Right.
sarcastic, it's completely sincere. Yeah, so anyway, so Tom, the notices banter section today has an
you
email.
only gave us 4 stars, didn't you? That was what
And then he
your...
gave us two
Oh,
stars, I think, after that,
it's
after
gonna be
what I
one
said.
now. It's gonna be one now, Jamie. Honestly.
Look, we can't ultimately look, Tom, ultimately it doesn't matter,
Ultimately, we
does
don't
it?
care,
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
people can give us whatever rating they want, because we're the number one podcast in the UK now, Christian podcast, we should say, and we don't care what you say. We don't care because we've made it big time. Anyway, let's look at this. Now, this is a criticism here, and this is fair enough. So, hi Jamie, I don't know why this is directed to me. Hi Jamie, when you, Daniel, or Tom say the Lord's Prayer, would you please slow down? It often feels rushed. To me, this is the most important part of your podcast, and I like to pray with you. Would you also please decide on one version and read it from a script to avoid mistakes? Regards,
Well,
says Steve. Thank you, Steve.
well, you should have thought you'd know it, really, wouldn't we?
Tom, as an ordained minister who's been trained in the art of theology and scripture, ostensibly, for many, many years, do you think it's necessary to have the Lord's Prayer written down for you in order to be able to remember it?
Well, do you know what, Jamie? I would say no, but in practice, somehow, on a reverend, if I do it slowly, because we did try doing it slowly, if I do it slowly, I tend to forget bits, weirdly. I get, and you, in fact, you left out a line last week, didn't
Yeah, I get
you?
distracted because I'm always thinking about the next thing. I'm thinking, well, what
Which
we're
is
going to
very
do
bad. It's a
next.
very bad sort of prayer habit. You should try and be present for all your prayers, I'd
It's the
say.
monkey mind, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jumping
So,
around all the
well,
time.
I
And
didn't know.
also the other thing about it is we don't have a version. So people are, there are sort of three versions you could do. So the BCP one, the traditional one in inverted commas, and then the modern one. Obviously, we're never going to do the modern one because it's awful. But so there's two, and then you can leave out the doxology or you can put it in. So there's at least two variations on two different prayers. So it's quite confusing, isn't it?
Can be, and every now and again, I'm tempted to do a sort of off the cuff translation of the Greek, but a bit confuse everyone.
Are you?
Well, yeah,
Well, why would you do that?
just
Just to
because,
be
just to be pretentious, really.
completely obnoxious. Yeah, well, okay. Well, anyway, don't really know where to take it now, but I think I don't know what to do about this because I don't want to agree on one version because I like the spontaneity. I am, after all, former charismatic. And I don't want to write it down because I feel like that would be admitting failure. So I think we're just going to have to try slightly harder personally. What do you think? Do you think that's the right thing
I
to
think
do?
it's probably the only way. Look,
Yeah.
but it's going slower, I think, is probably sensible. So
Yeah.
thank you that you find it important. I agree that it's important. I think it is important to have that moment of prayer.
Yeah, I do as well.
Talking of which, we should do it.
Yeah.
We should
So
do it. We should
let's
do
do it
it.
then. You do it this time. I mean, I don't want to do it because I feel a huge amount of pressure. And then I'll do the reading, which again is going to be the reading for this coming, the gospel reading for this coming Sunday. Just because it's the only thing we could think of. And I've just been preparing a sermon on it. So
It's nice. It's always helpful because I haven't yet started. Oh dear. Right. Once upon a time, as a curate, I could spend half a day doing a sermon. That was lovely.
yeah.
Right.
It's about priorities.
I know.
That's what I'm going to say.
I know. I know.
I'm surprised at you, Tom, with your Protestant emphasis, not spending time the Word of God, preparing sermons.
I should spend more time.
Sorry, there's no condemnation here, brother.
No, I know. So let's pray. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive them that trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen. So
So.
hope that was acceptable.
I did read it, actually.
Did you actually read it out?
I did. Do you know what? I wasn't gonna wasn't gonna allow a mistake to happen for that
Yeah,
one. Anyway.
that should have really been like day one at theological college, shouldn't
Or
it?
just say the Lord's Prayer over and over again until you know
Yeah, exactly.
it.
Yes. Anyway,
I keep
okay.
forgetting the blessing. My favorite one is forget the blessing. I get to the end and it's just, it goes. By the time I've begun.
Which blessing do you use? The one, the peace of God which passes all understanding, that one.
No, I
Okay.
just, I use, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord lift up the light of his countenance upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord look upon you with his favor and bring you peace and the blessing of God Almighty, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Yeah, the Deuteronomic
The
blessing.
Aaronic blessing. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, anyway, John chapter 10, we're going to read from verse 11 to 18 today. I'll read this, and I'm reading it from the English Standard Version. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father.
Lovely.
Yes, it's a good one, isn't it?
It's great. There's a lot going on in there, isn't there?
Yes,
Kind of
plenty.
plenty to talk about.
Yeah,
You've
indeed.
provided, shall I offer some thoughts first? And
Yeah, you can do,
so
yeah, for sure.
it's always a good question to ask yourself when you get a passage like who's Jesus talking to? And he's talking to the Pharisees, I believe, or at least those Pharisees. And
Right.
I suspect that's strongly suspect that's who he's criticizing about the hireling. There's a sort of ancient tradition of shepherd stories, and I think particularly of Zechariah, which sort of t taps into this kind of same idea of the hired hand and also the prophet as the one sort of guiding Egypt, Israel, with the staff in his hand. And Jesus is using quite well-known terminology here, and he's putting them in the place of these of the evildoers of the Zechariah story, Zechariah shepherd prophecies. So it's quite but I mean we I mean the sort of logic behind it works quite well, doesn't it? Obviously those who don't own the sheep aren't going to sacrifice themselves for those sheep in the same way that someone who might own them does. And Christ is there making a making a prediction later on, which I think comes tells us how he's going to protect the sheep. Well, he protects the sheep and gathers them by laying down his life for them and then taking it up again. So there's a prediction of the resurrection there and the work he's done. And then in the middle, there's this rather nice bit about having other sheep. There's a current sort of furore in the church. I don't know if you've been following this, Jamie, about this chap who this New Testament scholar Richard Hayes, who's changed his mind on sexuality after writing a very influential book about it in the 90s. And it seems to be the book's not out yet, but it's from what people are saying on it, his argument is going to be taken from the inclusion of the Gentiles as a completely new thing to God, you know, and so it was completely unpredicted is his argument, you know, and it's a trajectory that was surprising. Whereas actually here we have a clear foreshadowing of that trajectory of the inclusion of the Gentiles. I have other sheep, and indeed, and I think that's almost certainly what he's talking about there. I'd interpret that,
Yeah, it definitely is, yeah.
and also, you know, there's a rich tradition of the idea of Israel being the one through whom other nations will come to worship at the temple in Isaiah. You get that idea. Isaiah 2 actually, and Jesus of course is the temple. In John we hear he talks about the temple of his body. He'll break it and rebuild it in 3 days. In Revelation we hear that the holy city descending from God doesn't have a temple because God is because the temple is the Lamb. So this idea that we know the Father through Christ, he's that mediator. He's the one who will lay his life down for us and bring all of the sheep, all the flocks of the Father together in safety to the Father.
Yes, very good. Yes. Yeah, no, I one of the things I suppose sort of relevant in terms of the this podcast and the kind of thing we think about is when he talks about, this thing about the hired hand, and people being a hired hand, not a shepherd. Now, I know he's speaking about religious leaders there. He's speaking about the Pharisees. But it got me thinking about the issue of trust and, who we trust and why we trust them. And there is just some really sort of sage and insightful wisdom here on the part of Christ, because the implication is that the hired hand is not trustworthy in this sort of, what would you say, this sort of profound or ultimate sense, because he's motivated primarily by his wages. So therefore, when the wolf comes and he's in danger, then he flees and he leaves the sheep. So it sort of raises that question of ulterior motives. Why are people doing what they're doing? Why are they offering leadership and guidance? And there are various reasons that people do things which are not to do with the welfare of the people that they're attempting to influence. And of course, this is something that we've spoken about, come into contact with many, many times on this podcast. I mean, to be honest, it got me thinking about the whole sort of COVID sort of propaganda era and the sort of various different motivations that were present during that whole time. It was presented to us as this kind of unambiguous desire to keep people safe. But actually, in reality, there are all sorts of conflicting motivations that people have, money, power, just the desire to be accepted by the establishment, the desire to maintain their careers, and so on and so forth. So you contrast that with what Christ says about himself. Why is he the good shepherd? He's a good shepherd because he knows his sheep, cares about them as individuals. They know him, so they know what he's about. There's no side, there's no hidden agenda. And then ultimately, because he lays his life down for his sheep, this is how you can tell whether somebody actually cares about someone else, is whether they're willing to suffer for them, is whether they're willing to sacrifice something of their own well-being or their own enjoyment or of life for them. And of course, Christ giving his life is the greatest example of this that there could possibly be. And it reminded me of in Yoram Hosony's book on conservatism. He talks about the way that genuinely caring for somebody else is to see that person's welfare bound up in your own welfare. So you see like another person is almost like a part of you in that sense. And when they're suffering, you suffer. When they're joyful, you're joyful. And so Christ actually, I would say, almost goes so far as to identify with us in that way, that he so loves us that he was willing to identify with us in our suffering, in our sin through the cross, and to therefore, bring us to everlasting life, so that we might rejoice with him forever. So there's that aspect to it as well. But I suppose the overall point I'm making is that this is how you tell whether somebody's trustworthy or not, whether they're willing to suffer, whether they're willing to give of themselves for you. And the good shepherd is willing to lay down his life. That's also another reason why it's so important that Christ is willing. It's not that he's an unwilling victim. Do you remember that article by Matthew Paris, who is quickly becoming my least favorite human being on the planet? Not because he's, not worthy as a human being, but because of the kind of awful things he comes out with. But when he was saying that the Christianity is basically a cult of victimhood because of the crucifixion, that's a fundamental misunderstanding of the crucifixion, because the crucifixion is about Christ giving his life, laying his life down in sacrifice, in willing sacrifice, not being made a victim, an unwilling victim who has to kind of rail against injustice or something like that. So that's why it's so important that he willingly gives his life. And then, of course, just to finish that off, just to sort of complete it, is that, he says, I lay my life down that I may take it up again. So the sheep are not exposed. They're not just left because the shepherd is dead, but the shepherd actually comes back to provide guidance and protection once again. And that's why the resurrection is so important. And again, why it's not just a straightforward story of victimhood. It's a story of sacrifice and victory over death. So anyway, some thoughts on that. good stuff. And that's basically my sermon almost. So you don't even need to come to my church to hear it. So there we are. So anyway, so we've got some stories, lots of stories this week, but we thought we'd start with something a little bit more lighthearted. So you actually flagged this up, Tom, didn't you?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's a, we criticize Welby a lot, but in this case, I actually rather like what he's done. I might get a copy of this.
Okay, I'm not so sure, yeah, but let's tell people what's going on. So in the Telegraph, Bear Grylls and Mary Berry to read Bible stories to children in film. The Archbishop of Canterbury drafts in celebrities to help the scriptures, to help make the scriptures more accessible to children.
They're not just any celebrities. They are, to be fair, like these are publicly Christian celebrities. They're not just like, you know, anyone. Are they?
Okay. Well, I didn't say there were anyone, Tom.
I know. But I think it's a rather good idea using, and it's a bit like when the Queen wrote the foreword to a book about her faith. Sort of owning that. Leveraging the celebrity status in her good words to help Christianity. And this is what they're doing. I think it's a really good idea, actually. So Bear Grylls reads the story of David and Goliath, while Mary Berry reads Jesus feeding the 5,000. They're quite appropriate in some ways. the Jesus Storybook Bible. Do you know it?
I do. I've read it several times, and I know it very well. I've read it to my children several times, I should say. Not just by myself. I think it's pretty good. Although one of the things I would say about it is it's absolutely obsessed with penal substitutionary atonement. It makes every single story in the Bible about that. Which you know.
I mean, you know,
well, you could say it's good.
The
Tom,
wrath
but
of God was satisfied upon that cross where Jesus died, etc., etc.
Yeah, I think that's a slight misquotation, but anyway,
I know.
Also. Anyway, but I just think it's not really necessary to have every single story about that. I just think that's a slightly wrong-headed theologically. But anyway. It's not that I disbelieve in that aspect of the atonement.
There are many sort of in terms of atonement where people get very het up about it. And I think, you know, for one thing, we're never going to know exactly what mechanism Christ fulfilled upon the cross. But we do know the outcome. But also probably all of them are quite true. You know, he did in some way fulfill the law and the wrath of God. He did in some way have victory over the devil, Christus Victus, you know.
The point I wanted to make here wasn't so much about atonement theology. It was just that kind of hard edge to the atonement is not something I would necessarily associate with the Archbishop of Canterbury. The other thing I just wanted to point out, and maybe people will consider this pedantic, but on the image of the Archbishop of Canterbury on the Telegraph website, which is presumably taken from this video, the word Canterbury is spelt wrong. I just think, like, you know,
Canterbury,
like for goodness sake, like you know, this is like the head of the Anglican Communion, or at least, you know, ostensibly 80 million Christians across the world, and the person who's making the subtitles of his videos can't spell the word Canterbury as well when he's the Archbishop of Canterbury. I just think, like, for goodness sake. And this was the case with all this stuff on you know, that comes out from the Central Church of England. I think it was it during Lent, all of the, you know, every single subtitle, you know, every single video had at least one mistake in the subtitles. And I think, like, you know, just get some standards, for goodness sake. I mean, it's embarrassing.
It's not Welby's fault, though, is it? But yeah, they need to get a better editor, don't they?
It says Canterbury.
Yeah, Canterbury.
It's just shocking, isn't it?
It's like someone, it's but definitely someone with like a estuary accent.
Canterbury.
They've just spelled it phonetically, haven't they? Canterbury.
Yeah. Anyway. No, I mean, I agree with you, Tom. I think it's good to give credit where credit is due. And, you know, hopefully it will get more kids involved with the Bible. And I think it is quite a good children's Bible, actually. I don't really know of any which are better than it.
I use the Storyteller Bible. Do you know? Okay.
No, I don't think I know the one.
Which is the one that Open the Book uses. That's quite good. The Lion Storyteller Bible. I quite like it.
Lion Storyteller Bible.
Is it
okay.
The Lion? I think it's Lion.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to look it up because I want to. I see that. Yeah. Okay. No, I don't know the one. Yeah. Okay. That looks quite good. Over 70 retellings, especially for reading out loud. Yeah. That looks good. Okay. Well, that's that then. The next story, Tom, and this is much more serious. I mean, lots of the stories we're going to talk about today are very serious. So this is about the NatCon conference that is we're recording on Wednesday. So this is ostensibly the
So
second day of this
I understand the
conference.
second day has gone ahead, hasn't it?
I
Is
don't
that
know, but
not? Yeah, I believe
let's
so,
tell
but.
people what's happened first before we rush ahead. So yesterday, essentially, you've got this National Conservative Conference going on in Brussels. You've got major people speaking there. So today, Viktor Orban was slated to speak, but yesterday you had Nigel Farage, Suella Braverman was there, Cardinal Mueller, who's a Roman Catholic cardinal, was there.
Why aren't we there?
Well, we haven't been
We're no,
invited.
we're number one podcast in religion.
We're the
Yeah.
number one podcast in the world.
In
Bar none. And yet we have not been invited to the National Conservatism Conference.
ridiculous, ridiculous. Okay, yeah.
No, I can the word conservatism. I always want to say conservativism. Do you know what I mean? Because
Yeah.
it's a funny word. Anyway, and what happened was essentially that there was, I think at first, a complaint by Antifa to the authorities, and then the actual mayor of Brussels himself sent in the police to
So
shut it down.
it's more complicated than that, Jamie, because there's a backstory as well. So it's not just the mayor of Brussels, it was the mayor of an area of Brussels. They have this sort of mayors for each area. And they had it originally in another venue, and the mayor of that area put pressure on that venue, said to move it to another venue, and then they got pressured off that one as well, moved it to a secret venue. And then the mayor of that area of Brussels, shut that one down, and left-wing Islamic mayor basically, who doesn't like national conservatism, doing it in order to prevent fascism. Well, no, ostensibly the that's not the word.
Ostensibly. What did you say?
ostensibly, I got halfway, and then I thought I don't know how to finish this word. Ostensibly, the reason for shutting it down was the anti-fascist protesters would be a threat.
Well, no, I'm not sure about that because we've got this whole mayor's order here, which is published
Yeah.
on
So the mayor's order makes referral to the protesters, does it not? And
Well,
use it.
but it also says that, in fact, some of the personalities concerned, some of whom are reputed to be, waiting for this, Tom, traditionalists,
Oh.
homophobes, disrespectful of human rights and minorities. We could also cite an author of controversial works on political Islam. It cannot be ruled out that extremist groups in Belgium or Europe are associating themselves with this event or seeking to undermine the safety of the participants in the conference. Well, that might be where the thing you were saying comes in.
The event could undeniably lead to violent reactions and considerable disturbances of public order, was what
Yeah,
the
including public safety, tranquility, and peace. Considering that, in order to avoid the foreseeable damage to public order and peace to the detriment of local residents, passers-by, and the safety of personalities concerned, appropriate measures should be taken. But didn't they? I mean, let's try and get the. Oh yeah, it also elsewhere it says that vision is not only ethically conservative, e.g., hostility to legalized abortion, same-sex unions, etc., but also focused on the defense of, quote, national sovereignty, which implies, among other things, an Eurosceptic attitude. So
Yeah, dreadful.
that's you shouldn't be gathering to speak about national sovereignty or to be a Eurosceptic, Tom.
In the Euro News website, the headline is Brussels police shut down hard right nationalist gathering featuring Orban, Farage, and Braverman. Like, two of those are
Shocking.
elected politicians, and one of them is
One of
a
them's a head of state,
one of them is a head of state. Yeah.
an EU member state as well.
So Emir Kir, the Brussels mayor was the one who shut it down, and in the end they didn't. What did they do? They basically realized they couldn't storm them out off, so the police basically blockaded
Yeah, so
the
the police
entrance.
went in and they were going to clear everyone out. This is what Treyer says. But then they realized there were all these media types there and they decided against it. And then they blockaded the entrance, stopped people coming in. They stopped food and other supplies being brought in as well, stopped people who were meant to be speaking from going in. So hasn't some other stuff happened? Like the venue owner has been threatened, his wife's been
With this
threatened.
threatened with a removal of their license, I mean, I think it's been resolved. I think they're open again today, after intervention from the Brussels PM. But it really shouldn't have taken the PM to I mean, there are safeguards even in Europe against this sort of thing. I mean, it's just completely ridiculous.
Are there safeguards, though, Tom?
In theory,
Are
yeah.
there? Or is this just the logic? This is the internal logic of liberal democracy working itself out. It's interesting, actually, and this is quite ironic because there's a writer who's a member of the European Parliament called Risgard Legutko, I think is his name, and he wrote a book called "The Demon in Democracy," where he argues that the similarities between communism and liberal democracy are actually much greater than lots of people recognize. One of the things that he says about that is that both of them are utopian projects, which are committed to the perfectibility of both man and society. And that for that reason, both of them tend towards authoritarianism and totalitarianism. And I would suggest that this is pretty good evidence of that. And he was actually one of the speakers at the conference. So you've got the mayor basically saying that you shouldn't be able to gather. So, I mean, he doesn't quite say this, but essentially the implication is that freedom of association and freedom of speech is not as important as stopping people from gathering together to talk about, what does he say, Euroscepticism, national sovereignty, to promote the protection of the lives of the unborn. Not that that's what he
Well, goodness
says.
me,
I mean,
this is all,
it's absolutely crazy, isn't it? On the one hand, but on the other hand, it is a sort of slipping of the mask, I think, because you see how authoritarian the ideology that's behind the EU and globalist political organizations actually is. And it's certainly not democratic in the sense that it wants to promote, as I say, freedom of speech,
Oh, they don't
freedom
care
of
about democracy. They
association.
don't want democracy, Jamie. They just want a convenient sort of a convenient skin to practice globalist government by technocrats. That's what they want, isn't it?
Yes,
They want.
yes.
I
It
mean,
was
and
it
there's this
gone.
sort of. I mean, Emir Kheir, of course, also that sort of sense of that alliance between Islam and the hard left, which is odd in many ways.
Yes.
Because he's actually been kicked out of the Socialist Party, apparently. This judge,
Yeah.
not judge, this person. And he's associated with hard right Turkish ultra nationalists, ironically. But of course, Islamic ultra nationalism is fine. He only really objects to kind of European nationalism.
Yeah. And many people are sort of pointing out that the seeming contradiction or incoherence in being massively, as you have just done, in being massively pro-Islam and, being very much open to mass immigration and to lots and lots of Muslims coming and living in one's country and having huge influence, and being in favor of a kind of a liberal democracy. Because if you just allow Islam to enter your well, if you allow mass immigration, lots and lots of Muslims come in and they want to exert political influence, then eventually they're going to turn the country you live in into something which isn't a liberal democracy. So it's
And I
kind
mean,
of like,
it's not exactly, we don't really need to predict that. You look at the Islamic countries that we have, and none of them are functioning liberal democracies. Some of them might have the patina of such a thing, but really, none of them are. Are there any functioning Islamic liberal democracies? Philippines, possibly. Philippines, but they're not very liberal, are they? No.
No, and
Turkey
sorry.
has elections, don't they? But they're not, they're basically rigged these days. Are there any others? Most of them sort of tend to be
No, I
bad.
don't think so. And that's the thing. I mean, I may have said it on this podcast before. I certainly talked to Nick Dixon about it, but this is what Michel Houellebecq predicts in his novel Submission, where you have France being run by an Islamic party as a result of a democratic election. And it seems to be a kind of a really big problem for liberalism, because in that sense it appears to contain the seeds of its own subversion. So, and that seems to be one of the, as you say quite rightly, Tom, that seems to be what's behind at least some of this because of the influence of Islamic ideology on this move on the part of the mayor.
Apparently, 30% of Brussels is are Islamic now. 30%. It's very quick change. Very quick change.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Talking of this, there was. Did you notice that we haven't really got this as a story, but as a sort of addendum, there's a High Court victory for Catherine Burbislas' school. Did you see that?
No, I didn't actually see that.
I think we spoke about the school. It is Catherine Burb. How do you say her name?
The Britain's strictest head teacher.
So she won in the High Court basically against the Islamic student who wished to. The right, you know, demanded the right to pray, and that she was not being allowed time off lessons and disruptive, Burbasing, the High Court has agreed that the school has the right to ban prayer. It's not a discriminatory; it's a ban prayer for all religions, the student knew what they were getting into when they went there. You know, it's a purportedly a secular school. I mean, no school, of course, is truly secular in the UK. They should be by default Christian, but they knew what they were getting into, and the High Court has agreed with the school. So that's good. That's good news, I think, on the whole. There's a sort of riot on Twitter about it, of course. But you know, if you want to go to Islamic school, then go to one. There are plenty, you know, and you can pray, you know, your five times a day, or even just a normal school, which allows it. I mean, plenty of them will do, but that particular school is the one, only one, as far as I'm aware, in the whole of the UK, which bans it, and they knew that when they were entering. So, why should it?
In this sense, I tend to agree. I think it's better that she won than that she didn't. But the overall situation is not ideal, in my opinion. There should just be one type of school, Tom, and it should be a Christian school.
Yeah, with morning and evening prayer and proper
exactly.
Hymns.
Exactly. No,
yeah, quite. But, you know, if we're going to have...
This is better than Islamic prayer being imposed on every single school in the country, whether or not they want it or not. So in that sense, it's good. But yeah, so we might as well cover this other story, which is about Islam as well, which is slightly further down the page, Tom. We didn't actually talk about this, but it's about this bishop who's been stabbed in this church in Sydney. And this is following another. So this is in Sydney. So this is following a second. This is following another knife assault, which happened. Where did the other one happen? Did you see that, Tom? That was also in Sydney, where this guy went on a killing spree.
That was awful. And he killed a mother, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he stabbed her baby. I don't actually know whether the baby died as well. It's terrible.
All
I don't know. I don't know if that one was actually a Islamic guy.
No, he wasn't. He was a psychologically disturbed man.
Oh yeah, but that's not necessarily mutually exclusive, is it?
No, he wasn't. I don't. As far as I'm aware, there's no religious thing. It was just very unwell.
Yeah. So this one certainly was motivated by Islamic ideology. So this bishop is outspoken critic of Islam. You can see some of his sermons online.
Actually, really, really enjoyed one. He's an enigmatic speaker. I'd go to his church, I think.
He's a fantastic speaker. He's very, very good. And just sorry, Tom, can I just say this? It's funny because in the Telegraph, they don't actually mention this, but the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Karen Webb, told reporters, we will allege the suspect attended that church armed with a knife and stabbed the bishop and priest. So that's two people. We believe that there are elements that are satisfied in terms of religious motivated extremism. And indeed, there's footage of him, the guy, you know, the stabber, which confirms this, which you can just see on Twitter. It's quite straightforward. I think he actually yells something like Allahu Akbar when he's stabbing him. I can't quite remember what I read about that, but anyway, it's certainly the case that it's as is often said nowadays, religiously motivated. Then did you get what happened afterwards, Tom? Because it was some kind of sort of
Riot.
riot or protest outside.
Well, they seem to have, and this is pretty awful, actually. I don't know whether the details are emerging, but it sounds like they cut off one of the fingers of the knife the boy who was attacking in an act of, the Telegraph says, in an act of vengeance after the teenager was tackled to the ground by members of the congregation, which is pretty awful. I don't like to
I don't
hear
know. I
that.
take it with a pinch of salt, Tom.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it is the case, then that's obviously dreadful.
Yeah.
And then there've been riots outside, with throwing bricks at police officers. One of them who's had a broken jaw, and they're shouting,
Was it "Bring him out"? They've been shouting.
"You bring him out." But I mean, I don't know quite what whether they what they think the bishop's stuck in the church. I don't know. He's in the hospital, and then he has released a. Has released a statement saying, be peaceful, I think.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So it says here people converged on that area and began to turn on police. People, just pardon me, used what was available to them in the area, including bricks, concrete palings, to assault police and throw missiles at police and police equipment and police vehicles. I think it should be, it doesn't sound like these were actually the Christians inside the church, does it? It sounds like people coming from outside
It
to.
sounds very odd. Sounds very odd.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously indicative of social unrest in Sydney and
Sydney.
presumably Australian society more generally. It's yeah, I mean it's indicative of the febrile times that we're living in Western countries, isn't it? So yeah.
We pray for him and pray for his witness and pray for his recovery and pray for the chap who stabbed him.
Yes.
The lad who's done that, and pray for his soul as well. So,
Yeah.
yep.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's that. Then so the other thing we didn't talk about too much last week, because I think it was just emerging, is the CAS report.
Yeah, it was the day
So
before, and we really should have talked about it more, but we hadn't really had time
yeah,
to
we
dwell on it, had we?
yeah, we've got stuff. We've got others, you know, others. We had other stuff to talk about, Tom, and it was only just emerging. But essentially, my understanding of this is, well, just try and summarize, you tell me if I'm wrong. So Dr. Hilary Cass carried out a review, was it at the behest of the government, into the NHS treatment on, so-called trans children, and has essentially said that hardly any of it's based on any evidence, and that children need to stop being given puberty blockers and various other so-called treatments for their gender dysphoria, and that there much more caution needs to be employed when treating children who have this issue. And lots of people are hailing this as a kind of landmark and saying, this is an important moment. This is a watershed in the sort of trans teen, I don't even know what to call it,
Culture,
debate, or yeah.
subculture.
Yeah.
It seems to be a sensible. I mean, there are some criticisms about the use of language in the report, and especially the use of the contested term cisgender, which I refuse to acknowledge as a term. It's nonsense, because it implies that that there's a sort of privilege to being frankly, normal. So there's some questions about that, but on the whole, it seems to be a really strong rebuttal of the way that the NHS has been treating children, and the way that the NHS has been rather overwhelmed by transgender activists in the last sort of 20 years.
Well, in a sense, yes, it's a good thing, isn't it? But also, I mean, what it doesn't do is it doesn't condemn the whole thing as an ideological construction, which is
Well, that's the
obviously what
point.
it
It
is.
buys into that ideological construction to a certain degree. It says, because it uses their terminology. Now, this is the criticism that Mayor Foster, who won the famous court case against her employers, has made of it, and her charity has, welcomed it, and to a certain degree, but is also concerned that it just still seems to be quite ideologically captured by some of the terminology around
Yeah,
transgender.
no, I mean, I suppose what I mean is, I agree with what you said, obviously, but I suppose what I mean is that the issue with this is not that, the evidence needs to be followed more closely. The issue is that the whole thing is constitutive of deranged ideology, and that to give children puberty blockers is an act of abuse, and it certainly is an act of abuse to surgically mutilate children or anyone else, and that this shouldn't be something which is acceptable under any circumstances, whatever evidence is brought to bear.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, so in a sense it's good. I mean, sort of when I was on Nick Dixon's podcast the other day, he was sort of, I think he mentioned this as sort of moving in the right direction in terms of the death of woke and things like that. I wouldn't be so sure about that. I mean, I think
You wait. Yeah, we'll see. We'll
this
see.
is a kind of, this is a good thing because it's making this kind of thing harder, but the whole thing should be this is like a mad a nightmare which needs to end immediately. We got an email on this from somebody. Dear Jamie, I know you mentioned briefly on your last show, but I wonder if you're going to talk more about the CAS report next week. If you do, it'd be worth highlighting how this report conflicts with the Church of England's advice for schools on LGBT issues and bullying in school, the Valuing All God's Children report.
Yeah,
In
we
short,
fisked this. That's an old word, isn't it? But we looked at this in detail when it came out, I believe. And you found something like 12 mentions of Jesus in an entire report or something like that. Do you remember?
I think it's much less than that.
It was less
Anyway,
than that, isn't
let
it?
me
Yeah.
read this here because this is important. So he writes, in short, the CAS report warns against hastily recognizing young people's transgender identities. Quote, it is possible that social transition in childhood may change the trajectory of gender identity development for children with early gender incongruence. In plain English, treating a child as the opposite sex could make it harder for them to grow out of what may be a phase. The C of E report, however, encourages treating confused young people as the opposite sex, going so far as to say, quote, deliberately calling someone the gender other than that which they choose to identify as is a form of bullying. Oh, that sentence is just so awfully written. I cannot bear to read this kind of language. And then he mentions the Bayswater support group, which I think is a support group that helps parents whose children have started to identify as transgender, but who don't want them to be mutilated by the NHS. So there's a tension there, he's saying, between the CAS
Definitely.
report and the
I mean,
C of E report.
I think a number of people now have called on the Archbishop of Canterbury to withdraw it, because of course he gives it his blessing and forward and et cetera, et cetera. And to turn away from this silliness. The church needs to understand that the transgender is an alternative and incompatible belief system to Christianity.
I hate that sentence. Deliberately calling someone the gender other than that which they choose to identify as is a form of bullying. I just, gosh, could they not have? I know it's not the issue, but could they not have written that sentence slightly more clearly? Don't misgender people. It's bullying. That's what they should have written. Anyway, well,
It'd still be
they
wrong,
should.
yeah.
They
I
really
mean,
wouldn't be the right thing to do, but it would be clearer. Anyway, so that's a bit of that. Anything else on that, Tom? Or are
no, I
you
think that's plenty, yeah.
okay? And then
Okay.
the next piece of global news is, which I don't know how much. I mean, obviously, it's a big deal for people involved. But this week, Iran attacked Israel, which was obviously a big thing. And it was because Israel was it because they attacked the consulate in Iran's consulate in Syria, I think it was. That was the justification for it. And basically, it was a big kind of missile strike on Tel Aviv, I think, in Israel. And that obviously was, well, just, I mean, it's obviously an act of war, act of aggression. I think it's the first time that's happened in terms of Iran attacking Israel since the revolution in the 19 or the regime change in the 1970s. So that's a big thing. At the moment, it doesn't really seem to have appeared to
Well,
led to anything else. Sorry, carry on.
Israel have said they're reserving the right to retaliate. I think personally that sounds very foolish. They've made the point that they're pretty impregnable to that sort of attack. They should now just forget about it. If I'm honest, like, I cannot see how retaliation could lead to a better situation than they're currently in.
Yes,
But
well, yeah, okay. Well, that's maybe Netanyahu will take your view on board, Tom.
Maybe. And there's this email, isn't there, from did we just say his name? I guess
You say his
D D
first
Dave,
name,
which
Dave.
It's, you know, Dave, I'm sorry, I cannot agree with almost any of your points. So just to go through it.
Okay, well, let me
Let's
read
go.
it and I'll put it to you, okay? Because otherwise it would just be a 20-minute long monologue. So, hi, Jamie and Tom. Continuing to love your work and the way you're still, in quotes, doing prayers. He doesn't like it when I say, shall we do a prayer? He thinks that that's infantile. I wanted to take issue with Tom on the Gaza issue. Tom, you said you didn't want to come down on either side, which was ridiculous, as you clearly did. Right, do you have anything to say to that, Tom? Are you taking a side?
Have I taken aside? Probably, I've taken a bias towards Israel, I must admit.
Okay, taking Israel's side. Okay,
But
sorry.
I'm trying not to, if I'm honest. But I think that if from what I said last week was that I feel that Israel are being unfairly judged compared to other similar sort of occurrences by Israel, by the USA, by the UK.
Yeah, you're saying there are double standards. So one standard applied to Israel, another standard applied to anyone else.
I did believe I also said that I'm not I can't really support their continued attack with because I feel that there's no I'm not sure whether it's their aims are achievable through military might.
You said that last
I
week,
did
did
say
you?
I did say that last week.
Okay.
I said I'm not convinced they could be they that any more. I'm not convinced that they're going to achieve their aims, so therefore they shouldn't do what they're doing.
Okay, I didn't hear you saying it that clearly last week. You may have implied it, but
Sorry.
to me, it's to be fair, I think to be fair to what Dave is saying here, I mean, it did seem to me like you were making the case for Israel, and many people have praised you, Tom, for doing that. Many people have criticised me for even asking the questions, and that's what I was just doing. It's just asking questions,
On,
right?
okay, go on then.
I genuinely like just don't know what to make of this, and I'll share something I watched on this week in a minute. But I am genuinely open-minded because I see things on both sides here. Anyway, so let's carry on. Regarding the recent killing of aid workers, you made out it was just one of those things that happens in war. It really isn't. The reason there has been such an outcry is because it's part of a clear pattern of indifference on the part of Israel. The UN have said that at least 224 aid workers have been killed since 7th of October. More, hang on a sec, let me finish the sentence. More than three times as many humanitarian aid workers killed in any single conflict recorded in a single year. If it wasn't deliberate, and we don't know for sure that it wasn't, it's criminally careless.
Okay, well, possibly criminally careless. They are, let's wait and see whether they prosecute the people who do it. In which case, that fine. It might well be criminally careless. But I mean, I just have a look here, and I type in U.S. bomb aid workers. U.S. drone strike killed an aid worker in Afghanistan, 16th August 2022. Afghanistan, U.S. admits cable drone strike killed civilians, 17th of September 2021. The U.S. still owes money to 10 Afghans it killed in a drone strike. Yeah, it's not great, but it has happened and does happen. On 3rd of October 2015, U.S. airstrike destroyed trauma hospital in Kudus,
Yeah,
Afghanistan.
okay, yeah, but
I
Tom,
don't, how much,
so he's not, hang on a second, he's not saying that, and again, I'm just putting the other side across here. He's not saying that no aid workers get killed in war. He actually cites a statistic here where he says more than three times as many humanitarian aid workers killed in any single conflict recorded in a single year.
And the next thing I want to say is that the UN AIDS agency, the UNWRA, sorry, UNRWA, which I think is where this is coming from, are in fact thoroughly infiltrated by Hamas. They have to be, on the day of the 7th of October massacre, Sari Ad-Darini is a UNRWA teacher in Gaza, took to Facebook to publish a video clip of Hamas fighters shooting up Israeli cars. She added a verse from the Quran suggesting that terrorists were on a mission for God, for will surely come to them with soldiers that will be powerless to encounter. Ever since the rule of a terrorist organization over Gaza Strip forces the UNRWA to act under their authorization and supervision, and the Hamas have quite a lot of infiltrated people in it.
So is the point you're making there that these figures are untrustworthy?
No, it's well, A, they're untrustworthy. B, at least some of those 224 aid workers are probably Hamas militants who also happen to be working for the UN aid working people, in which case
Okay.
they're valid. I mean, if we're going to
Targets.
say targets.
Yep. Yep.
So I mean, how do you know? Finally, I'll keep going. Go on, keep going.
Okay. All right. Yep. And as for writing off the widely used numbers for civilian deaths, on what basis? You said
Okay,
it
good
was.
question.
Hang on a sec. Hang on, just one sec. You said it was 1-to-1 civilian terrorist death. Where did that come from, Tom? Who is
Good.
saying that?
So this is by the Dr. Abraham Winter, who is a professor of statistics and data science at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. He wrote an article in the Daily Skeptic in which he charts out and demonstrates how the statistical numbers coming out of Gaza are nonsense. They're fake, they're fraudulent, they're propaganda. You chart them on a thing, you see that there's a very regular increase of deaths every day. That's not how deaths are spread out, not how they're not it's there, you know, over he charts them over a few months, and he finds that on average 270 deaths a day reported by the Hamas authorities, plus or minus about 15%. This is no there's no variation. And there should be days where there are twice as many, there should be days where there are half as many. You know, Israel doesn't do the same amount of military activity every single day. He also then does some statistics about the proportion of women and children killed in the statistics released by Hamas. He says that, you know, you should see a correlation between the number of women killed and the number of children killed, because in generally speaking, they inhabit the same spaces, and that the women are the caregivers. There's very little correlation between the number of women killed and the number of children killed in the
The
evidence
statistics, yeah.
statistics that the Hamas release. Okay, finally. There's a negative correlation between the number of women killed and the number of men killed, which makes no sense. In the days that you expect to see, you'd expect to see both women, children, and men killed more together, because those are the days where Israel do a strike. They're going to strike men, women, and children are going to be there as well. If they, you know, there's the idea that that on the days where they kill lots of men, they would kill fewer women is. It's bonkers, you know, and again, negative correlation. So, according to the statistics that Hamas release, more women get killed when there are fewer men killed.
Okay, so but what about what Dave is citing the UN there? He's saying the UN have said at least
but
that
the UN,
30,000 civilians have been killed.
so that's from Hamas. That's where they're getting those details from. That's from
Okay,
Hamas.
all right.
You know,
So that's yeah. Okay.
you know, the. The tr he, this particular article, so the truth cannot be known and probably never will be. That's true. The total civilian casualty count is likely to be extremely overstated. I think that's probably true. Israel estimates that at least 12,000 fighters have been killed. If that number proves to be even reasonably accurate, then the ratio of non-combatant casualties to combatants is remarkably low, at most 1.4 to 1, and perhaps as low as 1 to 1. By historical standards of urban warfare, where combatants are embedded in and below civilian population centers, this is a remarkable and successful effort to prevent unnecessary loss of life when fighting an placeable enemy that protects itself with civilians. That's how Abraham Weiner finishes. And I've seen this. This is quite often the same statistics I've seen on Spiked as well. Brendan O'Neill brought the same thing. So just one the one evidence, one prima facie sort of evidence that Hamas's numbers are nonsense. On February the 15th, Hamas admitted to losing 6,000 of its fighters, which represents more than 20% of the total number of casualties reported. Taken together, Hamas is reporting not only that 70% of casualties are women and children, but also that 20% are fighters. This is not possible unless Israel is somehow not killing non-combatant men, or else Hamas is claiming that almost all men in Gaza are Hamas fighters.
Right.
Because,
Okay. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. No, that
So
makes
all in
sense.
all,
Yeah.
so all in
Yeah.
all, All
Yeah.
in
I
all,
think
I.
the point's pretty clear there. So he says, and I do want to say something about this in a minute, but he says here, the fact is Israel is out of control, having been given a free pass to do whatever they wanted following the October massacre. We can still believe that the massacre was an outrage, which Israel had to respond to robustly without saying that they could act with impunity. So that's kind of the end of his argument there.
Okay, and finally, I would like to say that under international law, and again, I don't really want to see fighting. I generally think that fighting is probably not going to achieve what Israel want, and but I'm not quite. I think they're in a real bind. But it is the case that under international law, the party that is responsible for civilian deaths in a battle, it is not always the one who is the aggressor. Actually, under humanitarian law, if you are shielding behind civilians, you are responsible for their safety. And you know, morally, and you know, in the end, Hamas could all walk out of the Gaza Strip and put down their weapons, release the hostages, and surrender to Israel.
Okay. Well, yeah. So you put your pr case across pretty robustly there, Tom. Now, and I think it's important as well to say, because this always stirs up a huge amount of controversy, and we get we get it from both sides on this, because what we're trying to do is to engage with this in a nuanced way. And Tom, you've even said to yourself you're not even sure that the attack should continue. So like that needs to be heard in the context of what's being said, because emotions are high and people have very, very strong feelings about this. Now, something, just to follow up on something I was talking about last week, I was sent Tucker Carlson's interview with Munther Isaac, who's a priest. I think, is he a Lutheran priest in he's a Palestinian Christian priest. He's an evangelical Lutheran. I found it here, pastor in Bethlehem, and Tucker Carlson has an interview with him, which is about 45 minutes long. It's on YouTube and everything, so you can watch it. Have you come across this, Tom, before I say
No, I
anything
haven't.
about
No,
it?
no, no.
Well, I mean, it's very interesting, and again, I'm just watching it because I'm being open-minded, and I, I'd like to know what's really going on. He talks about the way that, I mean, yeah, I just, some of it is shocking. Tucker Carlson plays clips from the US House of Congress, where you have people, like there was this guy who I can't remember his name, but it was a former Christian pastor talking about how Palestine should be treated as Nagasaki and Hiroshima were treated. He says, we should just essentially have it, the whole thing flattened. And anyway, so that sort of sets up the context of this conversation. But essentially, the priest or pastor Munther Isaac is making the point that nobody cares about Palestinian Christians, that the Christian church in Gaza is being destroyed. Essentially, the Christians are being killed. He also gives he also reports eyewitness testimony of civilians being killed, just outright shot. He talks about two women coming, I think, coming out of church who were killed, just shot by IDF snipers, I think he says, and things of that sort. I'm just reporting my sort of
Yep.
memories of listening to it.
I don't think I remember that talking about that IDF snipers story, and it's not as complicated, not as simple as just two women wondering. Anyway,
Well, I
again.
mean, it might be a different story, Tom. It's a you haven't heard the interview,
Right.
and I think that, to be honest with you, it's pretty convincing. The argument that he's making is pretty convincing, and I think it's at least a valid point that needs to be recognized by Christians, that there are Christians in Gaza who are being killed and who are not, the aid that the Christian church in Gaza is receiving is very minimal from Western nations, some of which are, have lots of Christians in them, like the US. So I think that's a very important point that needs to be made. And then just to follow on, you remember last week I was saying that I think that identity politics were at play here. And again, this is not me saying, I don't think October the 7th was from the pits of hell, because I think it was. And it's not even me saying I don't think the what Israel is doing in terms of trying to wipe out Hamas is wrong. I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying it as it seems to me. When I typed in Tucker Carlson, Munther Isaac to try and find this video in preparation for this story, all the stories that come up are about how this guy, Munther Isaac, is an anti-Semite. So like the Jewish insider, Tucker Carlson's pastor from Bethlehem is the high priest of anti-Semitic Christianity. And it's basically, it's it, and that's the way, and that's the way it goes. Now, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, because what is happening here is that this guy is being smeared as an anti-Semite rather than his points being engaged with. And that's the identity politics playbook. It's just saying, well, you're an anti-Semite, you're a bigot, and therefore we don't have to listen to you, therefore you're discredited. And that's what the left do on the other side. Do you see the point I'm making there, Tom? So I find that kind of thing makes me feel very suspicious. I think it's manipulative. When what really should be happening is that the points that he's making in terms of the treatment of Palestinian Christians or the killing of the unnecessary killing of Palestinian civilians should be engaged with, rather than just saying, well, he's an anti-Semite and you don't need to listen to him for that reason.
No, I agree. I mean, there is a conversation to be had. I don't know what we need to talk about, what unnecessary is. I mean, if there's a You know, and I could say once again, if
Well, like the killer, like there's just a straightforward killing of civilians, like the murder of civilians.
I don't think
I don't, I don't, I Tom,
I
I
don't
don't
think
know.
there's any
Sometimes,
evidence. And I'm
well,
reading
Tom, are
now.
you, to be fair, like you've not actually watched this interview, so you're
Yeah,
just dismissing something you've not
so
heard. I
I
mean,
can't.
there is evidence. I mean, if you read that book, Son of Hamas, even this guy who's like has defected from Hamas and is now pro-Israel is talking about IDF soldiers killing civilians, like just shooting them in Palestine. So I don't know. I think one could overstate the case here. Then, and this is what I'm saying. It's like it's possible to be the case on both sides, isn't it? The numbers that are coming out from the UN may be completely inflated and wrong, but that doesn't mean that things aren't happening in Palestine, which are absolutely horrendous on the part of the IDF. It could, but both things could be true at the same time.
They can be true. I mean, I suspect strongly suspect the circumstance he's talking about are the mother and daughter,
No,
Nahida
it's not
Tehillil
Tom.
Anton.
He's talking about two
Yeah,
old women.
they are two old women. The mother is about 80 and the daughter is about 50. And Nahida killed Anton and her daughter Samar. Now they were shot and killed outside their church. The Israel haven't found any evidence that this has happened by them. I mean, the other thing is it could have been a Palestinian sniper, of course. And people are going to say, "Oh, Tom, you're so naive." But they have said that there was a rocket propelled grenade fired from the church, and that the Israeli soldiers responded by attacking some spotters, which they identified on the church building. So, you know, it's like I say, it's
Yeah,
who's
Tom,
right?
you don't know that that's what he's talking about. You haven't seen the video, so
I
you
strongly suspect that's that if
don't.
mother and daughter killed by, if you type it in to Google, mother and daughter killed by
Yeah,
Israel,
Tom,
that's
come
the
on.
story you find.
Come
It
on.
might be a different one, but I'd place a bet that that's the one if I was a betting man.
Well, I think you should just say you don't know if it's the same one. So it applies if it's the same one, but it doesn't if it's completely irrelevant if it's not the same one.
Is it about the current Gaza war?
Yeah, it's about
In
what's
that
going
case,
on at the moment.
in that case, it
Well,
would be that one.
Tom, there might be more than one occasion of, more than one story
They
which
tend
is
to hit the press,
similar.
Jamie, you know, and that's, you know,
No,
that's
Tom, come on, this is infantile. Come on, you haven't seen the video. You don't know what he's talking about. So, come on. Come on, be reasonable. In that case, yes, okay, there may be another side to it, but it might be a different story. That's all I'm saying.
don't think it is.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. All right. Fine. Even so, there we go. All I'm doing is I'm just trying to just tell people, what I'm engaging with.
I'm not surprised to discover. I wouldn't be surprised actually to discover there are IDF soldiers who shoot civilians. I wouldn't be surprised that most of the time if that happens, it's a case of mistaken identity, and I wouldn't be surprised that those people would be punished if they are discovered to be shooting civilians. And that anyone who's actually, you know, murdering deliberately Palestinian civilians, I would suspect would be discovered and disciplined and incarcerated for it by Israel, because I think on the whole they are trying to there's absolutely no plus for them as a nation or in their war effort or in any way if they just allow their soldiers to kill indiscriminately. There's no benefit. And
Well, I mean, it might just be because they're made motivated by hatred of Palestinians.
maybe, but again, there's no benefit to and if that is discovered, then I hope those people are disciplined and incarcerated for murder, because that's what it would be.
Okay, all right. Happy to leave it there. I
Okay.
love you, Tom. You're my brother in Christ, and respect your opinion. The other thing I just wanted to talk about in terms of, and just to say, everyone knows we're good friends, and we just speak robustly, don't we, Tom, in a way
I
which
do.
is
He's
respectful.
the
Oh,
bad
sorry,
boy.
I just clicked on a link and an advert for a video came up with that guy Stephen Bartlett advertising Huel. So that was what that noise was. So this is just the other story I just wanted to talk briefly about. Was this Matt Redman, Beth Redman documentary about Mike Pilavachi, which we've spoken about the Mike Pilavachi
We
story
spoke
before.
about it briefly, didn't we? And I mean, I can't really quite remember what we sort of We said we needed more information, really, didn't we?
Yeah,
Because
so let's update people what it is. So Mike Pillow actually is the head of Soul Survivor, or it was the head of Soul Survivor. It's a big Christian festival. Thousands and thousands of people go there. Big evangelical rave up. Also, a church in Watford, I think it is, isn't it? Soul Survivor. Anyway, so a number of people came forward. I think it was last year, alleging that he had behaving in an inappropriate and abusive way with young men, essentially doing things like having wrestling matches with them, giving them massages with olive oil when they're in their underpants. I don't know where I'm getting olive oil from. Maybe I'm making that up. And generally treating them in a psychologically abusive way, giving them the silent treatment, picking them up, putting them down, that kind of stuff. We expressed skepticism, and on my part, I was just there were a couple of things. Like, so firstly, a lot of the complaints were anonymous. A lot of them were vague, or all of them were anonymous, with the exception of people like Matt Redmond. But they were anonymous, vague, and also I am somewhat suspicious when things like this happen, because I feel like sometimes it's just an attempt to sort of take down prominent evangelicals, just because liberals hate them and they want to get them. So that was kind of a skeptical note for me. And also, there are aspects of the story which didn't really seem to make sense, which I still have some questions about that. But that was kind of where I was coming from. What was your
Yeah,
sort of?
I guess my take was that we need to be careful, again, because we didn't know exactly what happened, but it didn't sound like there was sort of sexual abuse or any illegal abuse happening. And I still don't think there's any sense in which there's a legal issue here. But that there is obviously an abuse of power issue, which I think we possibly said that it was very unwise to start massaging people in your underwear, whether or not it was a sexual thing.
Yeah, I mean, it does sort of sound sexual to me, to be honest with you. Some of the
Maybe.
stuff that's coming out now about his
Yeah.
like hand going up the inner thigh of these young men, as you say, it's not technically illegal. And actually, somebody's actually made the point on one of our episodes. It's not a point I agree with, I hasten to add, but these are young gay men, exploring their sexuality. Why shouldn't they be able to, do these things? It's not something I agree with, but it makes the point that these are technically not illegal activities.
Mind you, I don't think there's any evidence that the people, just to be clear, were gay in this. I don't know.
Yeah,
Possibly.
well, the people who have come out and complained about it don't sound like they're gay. It sounds like they didn't like it, and
Or
they found it
they felt
pressured into
pressured
it.
into it, which is
Yeah.
wrong. So.
Yeah. So that kind of stuff, it does sound really weird and strange and possibly abusive. So I watched this video because somebody suggested I did. So Matt Redman and Beth Redman video called Let There Be Light, which is on YouTube. And it's basically a half an hour long documentary. And it is essentially, I mean, the core of it, in terms of the actual, I would say the meat, is really Matt and Beth Redman. Matt Redman's a worship leader, very, very successful, famous worship leader, who now lives in America, but he was involved in the Soul Survivor movement from very early on. And he basically says that Mike was abusive towards him. So he talks about the way that he was sexually abused as a child, that Pilavachi, he confessed this to Pilavachi, and then Pilavachi kind of counseled him about it. But then he'd do stuff like wrestle him after he'd, been talking about the sexual abuse he'd been on the end of. I don't think Redmond alleges any, massages or anything like that. But he does say that there was just really weird, abusive behavior from Pilavachi. Like, they went on this mission trip once for a couple of days, and literally sharing the same cabin in a ship, and in the car together for hours. And Pilavachi gave him the silent treatment for the whole time, literally didn't say a word to him. He says that a similar thing happened when he got engaged to his wife, which almost made me think, is Pilavachi kind of, fancy Matt Redman, and he's upset that he's got engaged or whatever. And then Beth Redman also talks about this kind of thing as well. And, I have to say, it's pretty convincing in terms of, I don't really think that it doesn't really sort of seem to me like there's any benefit for them in making this up or anything like
No,
that.
it sounds to me like he was using his position and power over young men to in an inappropriate way, as abusive power and abusive abuse of his spiritual leadership.
Yeah, I think
Basically.
so. Yes, the only thing I would say about this, and this is just a genuine question, and it, so again, like, please, please accept it as a genuine question, listeners. But I've heard, because I know people who were involved in Soul Survivor. I mean, I never was myself, but I know people are involved with it. But I've heard that Redman actually made Mike Pilavachi the godfather to one of his children, and that would be a sort of question to me as to why, after all of this weird stuff has been going on, he clearly didn't like it all the way through. Why then do you make the guy a godfather to your children? And then the further question is, why not just tell people about this ages ago? I mean, this is like decades ago. You're a major worship leader. You're like a millionaire. You're massively powerful. Why not just tell people? Why is it now, so many years later? Is there like some kind of emotional barrier there, or
Well,
do you know what
I
I
think
mean?
it's not unreasonable to say there might be an emotional barrier there. I think I think it can be a sense of like a new perspective, can't it? Like that might have seemed normal at the time. And I mean, as sort of we said there, you can justify some of these things. I mean, it's a bit weird, but if wrestling is your thing, then there are professional wrestlers and there are people who train wrestling, and wrestling is obviously a people think something that some people like doing. If that's your thing, then you could justify it as a bit like that, couldn't you? But then it's when it becomes an abuse of power and possibly abuse of kind of an outlet for sort of maybe, I don't know, kind of domination that you end up with a serious problem, and maybe you only see that later. I don't know.
Maybe. The whole thing is just a very strange story, in my opinion. The other thing I've heard about the Soul Survivor sort of vibe was that there was a lot of this kind of male banter, which you get in some places, where people are kind of a bit mean to each other and they're sort of always telling mean jokes. And to be honest, you can sort of see that in some of the clips that have been shared on YouTube. With outrage, like, look at the way these people are talking to one another. And not that I'm excusing or anything, but I can kind of see how that wrestling thing might be a kind of outworking of that culture. You sort of have this banter, which then turns into sort of playful wrestling, which might be inappropriate. But anyway, so that film is available on YouTube. I'll share the link to it. I suppose one of the things that we could say about it is that it demonstrates the sort of the difficulty and maybe even the danger of having these massive church leaders and spiritual leaders who are have these huge followings of thousands of thousands. I mean, obviously we've got that, Tom, because we've got the number one Christian podcast in the UK, but we're not going to like massive events where we've got thousands and thousands of people who are like hanging on our every word. And if we were, we'd probably become extremely egotistical. And
Well, you already are, Jamie.
I don't know,
No.
even more egotistical than
Yeah.
we already are, which is hard to imagine, I know. But I suppose it's one of those things, isn't it? Did you see, by the way, that thing with Mark Driscoll? I didn't include it in the
No,
notes.
I'd sort of I'd started watching the program on the Twitter thing,
Oh, Jamie Brambrick's thing, yeah.
talking about what this thing, and I got, frankly, what always happens with these spoken word things, I got bored about 10 minutes in and stopped, or 5 minutes in, because it's just I can't process information. It's too slow. I want it to be written down, then I can process it at good speed. I think there was a male stripper at
Yeah,
a
so
big evangelical.
it was a big like men's conference in America. I'm not sure where. And w some of the ones something that happened at the beginning was that they had a male stripper. I mean, he wasn't doing a striptease,
No, he
but that
was.
was his profession. He like took his shirt off, swallowed a sword, and then ascended a pole. And
Right.
well, I think like I honestly I don't know, but I then watched a trailer for this, and I saw that there were all these other things going on at this, men's conference where you had sort of like monster trucks and like boxing, and
right.
I don't know what was going on, but it was like this kind of I just can't understand it at all. Like,
Do you know,
it's absolutely bizarre.
I just don't really understand why people would go to that. I don't know.
Well, it's just entertainment, isn't it? And I don't. Yeah, I don't
They
know.
do they share the gospel? So Mark Driscoll sort of tried to stop it. He was a talker, wasn't he?
No, well, no, Mark Disu did a talk. Well, he started a talk, and he was going to talk about the spirit of Jezebel. But then he said at the beginning of his talk, he'd been praying for the people there, and his voice was hoarse because he'd been up praying all night. And then he said, yeah, and I'm going to talk about the spirit of Jezebel, but the spirit of Jezebel has already been here. And then he started to do this critique of the male stripper. And the guy organizing the conference on the side goes, you're out of line, Mark. And then he sort of carries on a bit. And then he goes, you're done, Mark. And Mark goes, okay, well, I'll receive that from you, and walks off the stage. And then the other guy comes out and he starts saying, oh, Matthew 18, Matthew 18. And everyone's going, boo, boo, because they obviously love Driscoll. And then the guy's trying to say that Driscoll should have spoken to him personally about it rather than coming on the stage and talking about it. But then apparently later on, Driscoll actually came onto the stage and had a dialogue with this guy and accepted that he should have spoken to him about it in private, which not as based as his original actions, in my opinion. Just really, really bizarre, isn't it? I mean, the whole thing. I think, personally, I kind of agree with what Jamie Banbrick's saying. I think Driscoll's being pretty base there, coming against the male stripper in the men's conference.
Yeah, it's a bit odd, isn't it? It's just a very strange thing that you'd want that. I don't know. I just don't know. And not for me. I don't know what a conference
What's not for you, the male stripper?
male sort of all bloke conferences sound dull. I don't
You
know.
want some ladies?
I just want just edifying things. Not monster trucks and male strippers.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree
Kind
with that.
of.
I don't. Oh, it's just lame, isn't it? I just think, it's just lame. I don't know, but I just completely don't get the culture at all. Maybe it's a legitimate way to like reach men is to like show them monster trucks and male strippers and
Let's
then preach
say,
the
and
gospel.
you know, yeah, okay, but
And so it's like that. It was like a monster truck, and then it was like a bloke with a microphone going, "And this is God's plan for your life." And then like some people like punching each other, and then like another guy saying, "And you can climb mountains and conquer in the name of Jesus," and then like that. One
I
of them
don't.
looked like John Piper, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't John Piper. I have to say, he looked like a slightly younger John Piper. It's not, is it? It wasn't him. That was actually the organizer of the conference, the guy who came out and said, "Go, Matthew." Is it Matthew 18? The bit about rebuke. Yeah, I think it's Matthew 18. Matthew 18. Matthew 18. Everyone's going, "Ooh, bring back Mark. Bring back Mark." They weren't doing that, actually. I made that up. Anyway, John, we should do an email. Do you want to choose an email? And I'll do a plug for supporting the show. You choose an email while I'm doing that. Thank you very much for listening this far. And we really appreciate everyone listening to the number one podcast in the UK of any type in the Christian church. If you'd like to support this podcast, we would really appreciate that because we do rely on your support. Become a patron today by going to our website, irreverendpod.com, and clicking on the big red button and joining our Patreon, which you can do for as little as £1.50 plus VAT in the UK. And that's per month, £1.50 plus VAT in the UK per month, almost nothing. Or you can give more if you like. And you get our bonus podcast if you do that, which is called Uncollared. Today, we spoke about, we spoke about basically the things we've been talking about today about how we're the number one podcast. But then we did also talk about baptism,
Baptism, yeah, we did.
and somebody asked us a question about baptism, so we talked about that. But we all talked about loads. We
We
talked
must
about loads
say,
of different stuff
one
about.
thing that has happened, Joe, we ought to sort out is that our question the rev has dropped off of this and sort of
Yeah,
found its way.
we should get Question of the Rev back in, shouldn't we? Because
We
a lot of
should.
these are actually questions, which we could just do the theme tune for.
Doop, doop.
Anyway, so please do think about supporting the podcast because just to be completely frank with you, I rely on the money to live. We need money for the overheads of the show. So I'm a vicar. I'm the vicar in a church, but I just have a house. I'm not paid. So I rely on the income I make from this and from some writing and other stuff that I do. So please do consider that. It's very, very helpful, just practically helpful. You get the Uncollared podcast, you get the episodes as soon as I finish making them. And you get the joy of knowing that you're genuinely helping us. If you don't want to become a Patreon, you can buy us a coffee on the Buy Us a Coffee website, Buy Me a Coffee website, which is also on our website, reverendpod.com. Click on the big yellow button. If you'd like to donate in a more direct way, then you can contact me and I can tell you how to do that. And we can do that in a way which is completely above board and so on. So anyway, please do consider helping us if you would like to by doing that. Yeah, that's the end of the plug. Thank you. So Tom, what should we
Yes,
do?
let's do the first one because it's been hanging around a while and it's quite
Oh
interesting. So
yeah, it's a long one, isn't it?
from Jen, yeah, it is a long one, but let's go. I'll read it through quickly. And then we can just do it. Okay, so from Jen. Though I am part of an independent evangelical church, I have a heart for the wider Church of God and love to fellowship and worship with those from other denominations. With this in mind, I decided to attend a Led by Spirit service at my town parish church. Two visiting female vicars led the service. And I could have ignored the haircut of one, not wanting to conform to stereotypical female looks, though being aware from your podcast there are already vicars in the same-sex relationships. I think basically she's saying she looked like a sort of lesbian.
If you read between the lines, I think that's what she's saying.
However, we're told not once, not twice, but three different times during the service that they... by them that they are partners and living together. Well, they are lesbians. Okay, there we go. Thankfully, they didn't
three times
they're lesbians and the hair. Thankfully, they didn't allude to the status of their physical intimacy, but I was already far more than I was expecting to encounter. I didn't realize it could be talked about so openly by within clergy already. I thought briefly about leaving after the second mention, but decided that wasn't what Jesus would do. I was already due to leave early as I had a previous commitment, but was actually grateful my planned time to leave meant that I wouldn't be there for breaking the bread because my heart was definitely harboring some bad thoughts at the time. What would you guys do? I would walk out. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be there in the first place, but I think, I would probably have gone by that stage.
I do sometimes go to these services and just sit at the back and don't receive communion as a sort of a little protest, but just to demonstrate. Yeah, I have done quite, especially when they were only receiving in one kind. I refused to receive in one kind.
Nice, I like that.
Because I'm an Anglican, I'm you know, literally legally safeguarded both bread and wine. It's in the 39 Articles.
And I would add as well, and I'm not going to say where it is, but my mum's church is not giving people communion in both kinds, and it's just absolutely unacceptable to be doing that on the basis of something that came in which shouldn't have even been there in the first place during COVID, but to be still doing it now is absolutely outrageous.
Take them to court.
I mean, as a first port of call, I'd speak to your vicar and say, look, come on, it says in the 39 Articles that that everyone's supposed to receive in both kinds, so what do you think you're doing not offering me communion in both kinds? It's unacceptable. Anyway, sorry.
As well as expressing my negative experience with those, I think we'll sympathize. We do sympathize. Yeah. I'm curious about something else they did. One of them picked up a book and walked around the front of the altar, holding the book up to the one behind it. Then separately, if I remember correctly, after one scripture reading, the Bible was held up and carried above her head as she walked down the aisle, where she proceeded to read from it about halfway down the aisle behind where I was sitting, with us standing and facing her. What's the meaning, significance of these things? Good. I'll keep going and then we'll talk about it, because also the incense was refreshed just before this and waved about before and or as she did the second reading. What's the reason for doing it at that moment? My limited understanding of the incense in the CV is of to signify the presence of God as a symbol of prayer and a sign of offering. But why specifically at the moment of scripture reading more than others? Right. Well, I mean, I don't do any of that. But essentially, I don't mind carrying the Bible into the congregation, because that's the idea, is sort of the word of God is in the heart of the congregation, sort of symbolically. I think that's right, isn't it, Jamie? The sort of holding up of the gospel book and the kissing of it and the blessing of it, I don't really like, because the gospel is you know, the gospel could be written on a sheet of paper. You know, the book itself is not that important. And in fact, mine is usually written on a sheet of paper that I...
I mean, Tom, no, you're not really answering what she's saying, though. She's asking you to explain rather than just for you to sort of go on a rant about how much of an ultra-Protestant you are.
But that's why I said that they are effectively just taking it into the heart of the congregation, aren't they? So that's the
same. Well, okay, so just to clarify, this is a weird service, by the way, because it's called Led by the Spirit, and then they're doing these kind of, you know, more liturgical things.
High Wycombe? I bet it was at High Wycombe.
Oh, maybe it was, yeah.
Yeah, it's anyway, the sort of thing they do.
Yeah, it does. It's like, so the charismatic
Catholics.
Sort of Catholic, you know, so-called Catholic element. So it would be the gospel book, not a Bible. And it's because when you do the gospel reading, as opposed to the other readings, the gospel book is taken into the heart of the nave.
I did say that.
Yeah, you did sort of in the midst of your little kind of critique. And you sense the gospel. I mean, what she says quite here is quite good. To signify the presence of God, a symbol of prayer, a sign of an offering. It's you sense things when you sort of set them apart for use in worship. It's a kind of it's an act of consecration. So it would symbolize that with regards to the reading of the gospel. So that's the purpose of incense in that context. But as I say, this is all very weird because presumably there are like people with guitars and
I just get really annoyed.
harpsichord.
I get really annoyed by my clergy who sort of ape the sort of blasphemous nonsense of the Roman ritualism, whilst refusing to take upon the discipline of the Pope.
Okay. Yeah. With
Sorry, Jim.
respect to our Roman Catholic listeners, Tom is obviously just exaggerating for polemical effect.
It's all right. It's actually I have used incense. In my church, I have no problem with it. I do have a problem with lesbian vicars, though.
Yeah, I think that's if you're going to take umbrage with any part of this service, it would be that, wouldn't it?
they are not ordering their life according to the gospel, and so
Yeah, and
shouldn't be
also
used as one.
by sort of talking about
So that,
being in an active same-sex relationship, which is forbid, is still technically forbidden for clergy to be
does it say
doing that.
active? Doesn't say active. It's just they didn't allude to the act of the status of their physical intimacy, but
Yeah, but they're living together, and I mentioned it 3 times. It's sort of
probably.
that's kind of the
No,
implication, isn't it?
the really horrible thing is really that they're parading the gospel about whilst disbelieving it.
Yeah, that's the thing which is objectionable, isn't it? Regardless of what you think about the liturgy, it's the hypocrisy and the false witness that's being borne to the church, the leading astray of the flock through heresy and false teaching. So
Okay. Well, thank
anyway,
you.
but thank you for that.
Sorry you had
Yeah,
to endure that, Jim.
don't go back. Don't
Don't
go
go
back.
back. Just don't go
Yeah, we can agree on that.
back. Yeah.
Listen,
All right.
Tom, I feel like, both this episode and last episode, there have been some exchanges between us, but all in the service of the
Sorry,
good.
Jamie. It's all
And
fine. It's all good. We
definitely. I just don't want people to, like I used to listen to the London Calling podcast, and sometimes people were like, oh, I'm really worried about James and Toby. They seem to have a really fractious relationship. That's not the case with us. I mean, we this is a genuine,
Brothers
like,
in Christ.
robust dialogue, but it's not, it's all in the service of trying to understand what's going on and exploring these issues. And that's the spirit that we offer this in to people anyway, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
As
No, no
we're not
problem, mate.
presenting ourselves as experts on most of these things.
Expert podcasters, ha
Well,
ha,
we are expert podcasters, to be
because
fair. We're the number one podcast for Christianity in Great Britain. So, yeah, if
one.
it, well, we don't want to call ourselves experts, do us, but
No,
do we?
we're
But
not.
if other people want to,
That'd be fine.
that's fine. Yeah.
Actually, they don't, do they? I was at John Robinson. It's not John Robinson, is it? What's his name? First name? Scottish Australian
John
minister.
Robinson.
It is John Robinson, isn't it? Who called our podcast Weefly. Oh my
David
God.
Robinson.
David Robinson. So I knew it wasn't John.
John
I knew
Robinson is John Robinson. Isn't he the Bishop of Woolwich who wrote
Yeah,
Honest to
you're right.
God?
You're getting confused there. I'm not very good with names.
What is this story you're telling?
He wrote us an email where he told us that we were somehow worked despite our amateur production values.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
so that's
No, it was a nice email. He was just
it was a
saying
lovely email.
that at first he didn't get it because the podcast was not sophisticated, wasn't well made, and wasn't funny. But then he said he loved it. So, so we forgive him for that. No, I mean, he meant it nicely,
He did. He did. It's fine.
and it's fine. It's fine for him too. And anyway, I think the amateur nature of this podcast really is a good
It's
thing
part of it.
because
It's part
it
of
demonstrates that people are listening to this because they want to hear sensible Orthodox Christian views aired, even if it is really badly produced and we can't hear what Daniel's saying because he refuses to use the microphone I bought for him.
What is he doing? What is he doing in Devon? Who knows? Anyway,
Yeah. Well,
anyways.
he says it's because his daughter keeps taking his iPad and that he has to use his iPhone. But
I
even
mean,
so,
seriously, like.
we shouldn't slag him off while he's not here.
No,
He
it's
intends
true.
to use the. We have
I
spoken
was,
about this,
I
and
did
he
say
does
his,
intend to use the microphone.
it was intended to. His one final thing, Jamie. I was
Go
very
on.
upset. I was very upset by Dick Denningpole on Twitter,
All
who
right. Who said what?
Well, he posted when he did stuff about the number one podcast, and he posted a picture of Maverick,
Oh
and
yeah. This is good. Yeah.
then said it was you and Daniel. And I was like, what about me? I mean, I'm one of the originals, one
Yeah.
of the two originals.
Yeah. To be fair, yeah. So
and then he said,
he's...
and then he said, Tom's the man refueling the F, was it F-16 with
That
holy water?
topping up the holy water tank on the F-14.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be fair, I think they're F-16s in Top Gun, if I'm not
Yeah.
mistaken.
Yeah.
And I said that I was the one on the left, meaning Tom Cruise, and he agreed with that. So that's fine. If I'm Tom Cruise, Daniel is Goose. No one even knows the actor's name. And you're the bloke topping up the water on the F-16. That's
Very
fine.
harsh, very harsh.
Yeah, well, at least he gets to be, in the actual
On
shot.
shot,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. No, Tom, you and I started the
Know,
podcast,
I know. If anything, I'm Maverick and you're Goose.
so yeah, I'm not sure about that. But anyway, let's finish there with a prayer.
Daniel's the chap who in the training college, you know. Anyway,
Who's
the
what?
older one, yeah.
Oh, Viper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Top Gun's such a great film, isn't it?
All
Although
right.
I have to say, the new Top Gun is, I think, arguably, well, I think it's actually a better film than the old one.
Let's
I
not
might
go
be
there.
a controversial opinion.
I'll be accused of ageism again. Right.
All right, shall I say a prayer today?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do the collect for the second Sunday after Easter from the Book of Common Prayer. So let us pray. Almighty God, who has given thine only Son to be unto us both a sacrifice for sin and also an example of godly life, give us grace that we may always most thankfully receive that his inestimable benefit, and also daily endeavour ourselves to follow the blessed steps of his most holy life through the same Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Okay, well, thanks, Tom. Thanks,
Brilliant.
everyone
God
else.
bless.
And until next time, keep watch. And God bless you all, everyone.
The faith.